It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome everybody in to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Sun Belt Podcast. I am this week's sitting in host, Brian Stone, usually second in command here on the Sun Belt Podcast. But I am joined this week by Underdog Dynasty Sun Belt writer Zeke Palermo. Zeke, say hello to everybody at home.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? My name is Zeke Palermo. Primarily cover Georgia State and Georgia Southern for Underdog Dynasty, but today helping Brian out, talk some Warhawks and Bobcat football.
For sure. So let's start off here with Texas State. You know, another rough campaign down there in San Marcos. 2-10 season last year, only wins coming over UL Monroe and surprisingly an upset win over Arkansas State. Zeke, I'm going to start off before we kind of dive into the team here and I guess try to diagnose a little bit of what went wrong. I want to ask, is this Jake Spavadal's last chance to kind of make something out of this program?
That's a great question. I know you and I, when the Underdog Dynasty writers, when we wrote about who's on the hot seat, over under for coach movement, you and I both agreed that Spavadal is probably on the hot seat. There's a lot of talk, at least on the Twitterverse. I don't know if it's coming from San Marcos, but he's in his third season, but the dude's 5-19, 4-12 in Sun Belt games. I think the chain is not quite tight yet, but as the season continues, I think we could see Spavadal's seat warm up.
For sure. So, you know, you kind of touched on the record for Tech, you know, Jake Spavadal as the head coach of Texas State. You know, I guess, like I said, 2-10 last season. I guess looking a little bit on the bright side here, you know, 6 of their 10 losses last year came by 10 points or fewer. So, I guess if you want to look on the bright side there, you know, they were in games, so to speak. You know, it wasn't like they were just getting their doors blown off every other week. But kind of looking at, you know, how this team is constructed and everything, you know, last year, like we said, rough season. But it felt like they kind of found their quarterback in Brady McBride. Would you agree with that?
I agree. Obviously, last year he took he was the starter in title, and moving into this season, I'm sure he's expected to be the number one guy coming into week one. But I am very curious. I think with Tyler Vitt, who played 3 or 4 games last year, he's been a very reliable backup in San Marcos for a couple years now. I think he's going to be gunning for a job, and they transferred in Ty Evans from NC State. He didn't play last season, but there are guys that want McBride's job, and I think Spavadal is going to give him a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any reason for those guys not to be gunning for McBride's job. I mean, anytime you go 2-10 as a record as a quarterback, you know, you're not locked into a job by any stretch of the imagination. So right. I think the key, if Vitt actually wants to compete, you know, when you go back and look at his numbers, he obviously played a lot less than McBride did last year, but he had real trouble not turning over the football. You know, McBride had a 17 touchdown, 7 interception type of season. Vitt, on the other hand, in the games that he played, you know, 9 touchdowns to 6 picks. Obviously, You know, I'll say this. I felt like many times last year when I watched Texas State that Brady McBride was kind of running for his life a little bit behind that offensive line. So you kind of touched on it. I mean, we'll dive into how this team is currently constructed with the crazy number of transfers that they have coming in for this year. But, you know, let's say McBride starts this whole season, wins the job outright, beats out, you know, Ty Evans, like you said, and Vitt. You know, what are your kind of expectations for Texas State this year?
Assuming it's McBride under center, I think he has an if we're going to talk floor ceiling on McBride and the Bobcats with McBride, he's got the ceiling to be among the top half of Sunbelt quarterbacks. We look at his stats last season. I mean, 17-7 and touchdown interception, by no means stellar, but at the level of football they play, it's Sunbelt football, that'll get the job done. So I think the ceiling is, it's a little ambiguous to say this, but the ceiling is pretty high for McBride if he can keep the job.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, I guess good sense would point towards him keeping the job. But if you get a coach like Spavital, who it's a make or break type of year this year for him, you never know like what he may throw at the wall as far as the quarterback goes, situation goes, and just see what sticks. You know what I mean? So just looking at it here, you know, they really did improve from two seasons ago in 2019. You know, Texas State averaged about 18.5 points a game, which was ugly. I remember doing this exact podcast and having to basically talk about them every week, which was like putting lipstick on a pig, so to speak. But last year under McBride, you know, they averaged 27.7 points per game and 5.7 yards per play. You know, he returns number one receiver Marcel Barbie, who scored 10 touchdowns a year ago, and they've got some good running back depth with a couple of those guys. So offensively, what do you think that they take another step, or do you think they kind of stagnate looking at this year?
I think the Sun Belt is a unique conference. They call it the Fun Belt for a reason. You mentioned Texas State averaged 28 points per game last season, but that was only sixth best in the conference. So it's difficult to improve in the Sun Belt in terms of your offensive production. I think you talked about the weapons coming back. The incredibly deep running back room is just any head coach would beg for the quality that's in that Texas State running back committee. I think the biggest key is going to be the offensive line. As we've brought in three guys who will probably be starting, three transfers, new offensive line coach with NFL experience. It'll be a tough improvement to make, but I think if there's going to be a team to do it, it's going to be Texas State.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of touched on the offensive line play a little earlier, but I specifically remember watching them play SMU the opening game of the season last year, and that game was very winnable for them, except it looked like McBride was really running for his life on a lot of plays where he was just trying to make, you know, something out of nothing. But, you know, going in, talking about, you know, we touched on Marcel Barbie, their leading receiver from a year ago. You know, he had 10 touchdowns, 584 yards receiving, led the team in receiving yardage. But the running back room, I mean, it is very talented and they are young. So, you know, do you expect this team maybe to try to take some heat off of the new offensive line construction and maybe try to run the ball a little bit more effectively than they did last year?
If they were to focus more on the run game, I don't know if that's taking heat off of the offensive line. Yeah, offensive line is obviously super important, as important in the run game as it is the pass game. So whether or not they decide to run the ball more at a higher ratio than they did last season, I think that does not impact the stress you're putting on your offensive line.
Okay. That's fair. So looking at this running back room, you know, they return leading rusher from a year ago, Calvin Hill, who ran for, you know, about 5.3 yards per carry, had 5 touchdowns. And then Brock Sturgis was a guy who came in and did some really good things. Iowa State transfer comes back for this year as well. About the same yardage, same number of touchdowns as Hill. And then Jamal Jeter kind of is that third guy that slots in to run the ball for this Bobcats team. So, you know, we'll have to see what kind of offensive identity they decide to kind of put forth. You know, Barbie is definitely a good receiver, and obviously, you know, McBride and Barbie had no problem, you know, connecting last year. But let's talk about the fact that Spavadal has decided to have his mail forwarded to the transfer portal because he's living there now full time. I believe this team as a whole has something like 14 transfer players coming in for this year.
The number I've got is 17 of 19 new players this year are transferred.
Yeah, that's crazy. I remember signing day last year looking at their maybe it was 24/7 looking at their recruiting page, and they had nobody, but then everyone was like, oh yeah, they've got 17 new players coming in. And I was like, from where? And it was, it was all from the transfer portal. So do you think that would help this type of team that has a head coach that kind of needs to make an impact right away? And you know, basically save his job. Do you think having this amount of transfers helps him kind of get a leg up because those guys might have some experience already?
Absolutely. What you just said really is what's happening. If you compare it to professional sports, this is signing veterans so that you can go win a ring now.
Sure.
Obviously, Texas State's not gunning for the Sun Belt Championship, but whether he wants to admit it or not, Spavadal is definitely trying to get an extra win or two by having veterans, guys that have been in the NCAA before, by relying more on transfers as opposed to incoming freshmen, redshirt freshmen.
Yeah, for sure. So let's kind of turn the page and go to the other side of the ball here. Defense was a real Achilles heel for this team last year. Gave up 38 points per game. Finished ninth in the Sun Belt against the run, which, I mean, Zeke, I'm sure you and the listeners know this better than anyone. As much as teams in the Sun Belt like to throw the ball around and score a bunch of points, I mean, a lot of these teams run the ball really effectively. So, you know, what is kind of your opinion, you know, when you look at a defense like this that couldn't stop the run, you know, what does that do? You know, what kind of chance do you give them to get better this year if they continue not to stop the run?
You don't win football games if you don't win the trenches. It's simple as that. I mean, I think anyone that's been around the game will agree with that sentiment. You don't win football games if you don't win the trenches. And so Texas State's inability to put any semblance of pressure on quarterbacks, or as you were just talking about in the running game, telling guys, hey, come walk all over us. At that point, you're conceding at any point 4 yards per play, right? You're saying at any right. point in this game, your offense can run a run play and we'll give you 4 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not in the slightest bit conducive to winning football.
For sure. You know, when you look at the top of the Sun Belt and look at the teams that are really, you know, kind of head and shoulders above the rest, you know, the Louisianas, the Coastals, the Appalachian States, you know, they like to throw the ball, and that's all well and good. But the backbone of those teams does really feel like the running game. So, you know, and then you mix in, you know, teams like Georgia Southern, you know, Georgia State likes to run the ball a fair bit. You know, you've only got a few teams like Arkansas State and Troy that really just have had in the past no interest in running the football effectively. So if they continue not to stop the run, I don't foresee this season going much better than last for the Bobcats. But let's talk about the secondary a little bit. We talked about, you know, the trenches and the front seven. you know, they were as bad as they were against the run. They weren't much better against the pass, even though they have a fairly good cornerback in Jaron Morris returning. You know, they gave up 6.3 yards per play, and they ranked 8th in the conference in pass efficiency defense. And you kind of touched on this a little earlier. They didn't even rush the passer very well. So with this amount of transfers, you know, what are you kind of expecting from this defense?
There are two transfers that have come in, specifically a cornerback that I think people are going to be watching. Eric Sutton, he's coming over from SMU. And then DC Williams played 3 games last year for Vandy. Look, you talked about Jaron Morris, who put up 4 interceptions last season, which I think is the I mean, that's just an impressive number for any player, but especially in such a poor defensive back in a poor secondary, that's impressive. But those picks alone just do not get the job done. It's about yards allowed at the end of the day. Picks mean when you're allowing as many yards as they were. So those guys I touched on, Sutton and Williams, I don't personally feel like they're going to do much. Sutton hasn't played a game since 2019 due to injury. And one story reads that he suffered or he re-inflamed that injury during the spring practice. And DC Williams, I mean, he played 3 games for Vanderbilt. So I just feel like, as with lots of these teams, you know, recovering from COVID with the extra year of eligibility, there aren't a ton of additions to be excited about in the secondary.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was the defensive side of the ball. Let's talk about the upcoming schedule for Texas State. You know, I think I said this last year when I looked at when we did the previews and I looked at Texas State's schedule for the 2020 season. I think I went through and said I see 1, maybe 2 wins on the schedule. They ended up, you know, pulling out a surprise win, like I said, against Arkansas State last year. This year's schedule, I mean, to me, it looks like to me that the winnable games, they have maybe 1 or 2 winnable games in the Sun Belt, and then maybe 1 or 2 outside of the Sun Belt. So what are you kind of forecasting once you look at their schedule for the upcoming year?
So before I get going into that, I'm curious what 2 Sun Belt games you think the Bobcats could pull out.
Well, I think number 1, UL Monroe, to be totally honest, like we'll talk about them, but they've consistently kind of been in the bottom since Caleb Evans, their quarterback from a few years ago, left. And I mean, like, to be totally honest, South Alabama and I think even Arkansas State are winnable games. They beat Arkansas State in an upset last year. South Alabama, I mean, people can go back and, you know, listen to our preview of them. I'm not sold on Jake Bentley, the Utah transfer at quarterback for South Alabama. I think he's going to do nothing but stunt the growth that Desmond Trotter showed last year. So they almost feel like to me that they're taking a step backwards at the quarterback position. So, I mean, you know, pick 2, essentially. That's right. Kind of how I feel about it.
So you bring up a good point. Obviously, they're going to squeeze out a win against UL Monroe. We'll talk about it later, as you mentioned. And South Alabama, you can win that game. It's early in the season. I think it's their first conference game. So that can really that'll set you up for an interesting matchup against Troy. Obviously, you'll lose to Troy, but if we're going to talk record, I can't see much better than 4 wins all season. 4-8. If we're going to be optimistic, 5-7, if they can pull something against FIU.
I think the Eastern Michigan game might be winnable as well.
Eastern Michigan's very winnable. Incarnate Word, obviously, that's going to be a runaway for them. But
yeah, that one should be a layup. That one should be easy. It's hard to tell when you look at, like, I looked at Eastern Michigan's schedule because, to be totally honest, I don't know anything about the MAC, like, from year to year. So it's hard to tell when you have a COVID-shortened season like the MAC did, or Eastern Michigan specifically. But, I mean, they started off 0-4 to start last year, and then they won two games right at the end and finished 2-4. So I don't think that they're some world beater type of team. And me and Matt have talked about this before. I mean, is the Sun Belt's probably the second top to bottom, second best G5 conference, right? After the American. So, I mean, by and large, like, would you say that maybe the bottom of the Sun Belt might be better than the bottom of the MAC?
I don't know. I agree with you that the Sun Belt is second, if not the top G5. I don't think there's much discussion that they're at the very least top two.
Yeah.
There's a very big power discrepancy between Coastal, between Louisiana, and then you jump down to ULM.
Yeah.
The top and the bottom, it is a very wide range.
Right.
So for you to go out and say the bottom of the Sun Belt is better than the top of the MAC?
No, I said the bottom of the Sun Belt and the bottom of the MAC.
Okay, yeah. I can give you that. I can definitely give you that.
Yeah.
Like I said, Eastern Michigan, I like you, I don't know much about them, so I guess we'll just have to wait for that game, see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, obviously their opener, I mean, they're going to get smoked by Baylor. There's no really argument there. And then, you know, we talked about all the out of conference games. They get three in a row: FIU, Incarnate Word, Eastern Michigan. They open with South Alabama at home, which is another reason I feel like that's a winnable game. And then from there, I just, unless they just take a huge step, I don't see wins over Troy, Georgia State, Louisiana, Georgia Southern, Coastal. I mean, I don't see them beating any of those teams. So, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I think 4 to 5 wins is this team's ceiling this year.
I wish I had some novel disagreement to give the listeners and some meaningful conversation here, but I mean, we're both in agreement. This is you look at the schedule and you know what games are wins and you know what games are losses.
Yeah, so that will pretty much wrap up the Texas State preview for this upcoming year. Now let's turn the page to the other Sun Belt West team, who was, I mean, I don't think I'm putting anything lightly by saying this. I mean, the absolute worst Sun Belt team last year. I mean, they were 0-12 or 0-11. They didn't win a single game. They were not even in contention for a lot of these games. I mean, Georgia Southern, they lost to the Eagles by 5, and that was the closest game they played all year. I think it's the only one score game they played all year, now that I'm looking at last year's slate. So obviously they completely scrapped the coaching staff, brought in a whole new, you know, unit. Terry Bowden comes out of retirement and is now the head coach. They brought in Rich Rodriguez to run the offense, brought in Zach Alley to run the defense. I mean, this team needs... This is like, what do you call it? When you flip a house and you just rip the guts of it out and you start over, that's pretty much what's happening with this football team.
I think, obviously, there's not... college football is unique. College sports is unique when compared to professional, in that you can't just trade guys away. So if you're trying to rebuild, it begins and ends with the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to talk about how good is ULM going to be, it's going to be how good is Bowden. How quickly can he turn this program around? Will he be able to turn this program around? His last job was with Akron. They hired him to turn the program around, and if I'm correct, he did not do that by any means.
No, he did not.
So how much faith do you have in Bowden and his guys? For me, it's very little.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got the resume to do it. That Auburn, obviously no one's going to forget that. Comes from one of the most important coaching families in all of football. So if someone's going to turn it around, it's going to be him.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. You know, I think that he has a very strong offensive coordinator who's almost a little overqualified at this point to be an offensive coordinator at the Sun Belt level. I mean, Rich Rodriguez, you know, not that long ago was coaching Arizona as their head coach. And I mean, let's be totally honest, he was doing a better job there than Kevin Sumlin currently is. So, I mean, you know, I think he kind of struck gold with Rich Rodriguez looking for a job. But let's kind of get into this year's offense. Rich Rodriguez is truly going to have to do some magic with this team, because last year only averaged 4.8 yards per play, 16 points per game last year. I mean, the offensive line has to improve. They do get Rich Rodriguez's son, Rhett Rodriguez, at quarterback, transferred over from Arizona. We'll see if he starts. You know, Colby Suits was pretty good last year for them. I mean, all things considered. And the one thing I didn't realize until I'm looking at it right now, Colby Suits was built like a brick house. I mean, 6'4", 245. According to ESPN, I didn't realize he was that large. Maybe they've got that wrong. But talk a little bit about what Rich Rodriguez may have to play with this offense this season, because it was ugly last year.
So you mentioned obviously bringing his son over, Rhett Rodriguez. I'm going to go out and just say it. I don't think you and I, but then also just the sports world as a whole knows a lot about Rhett Rodriguez. He's only 100 passing attempts on his career, which is, what, 3 games worth?
Yeah.
So it's hard to predict, and it's always hard to predict who's going to be good, who's going to be bad. But with such a small sample size, I don't know if what we can expect from Rodriguez. I think it'll be a unique dynamic. Will it impact at all that he's playing under his dad? You know, that's a bit more of an off-field story than it necessarily is on-field, but will that play into this at all? You talked about the just atrocious running game, 76 rather yards per game. That's just, and then they lost their leading rusher, Josh Johnson. I think he signed up with the Seattle Seahawks. So the weapons are not there on the offensive side, and it'll be, you mentioned Rodriguez is possibly overqualified for this job. Well, you got to make sure you follow through on that.
Absolutely. So I'm just looking through the stats from last year, trying to find kind of a diamond in this rough. You know, Josh, and I hate to start off this way, but Josh Peterson was the leading receiver for this team last year, son of, you know, former Eagles coach Doug Peterson. He's gone. So you not only have to find a new leading rusher, you have to find a receiver to kind of break out of this pack of guys that they've had. And, you know, they get a fair bit of receiver transfers in as well. You know, they get wide receiver Jalen Jackson, Jared Sparks, Darian Wiley, Jeremiah Knight. I mean, we'll see if any of these guys kind of step up and become the guy there, but there's nothing but opportunity to be the main pass catcher in this offense. And maybe Rodriguez has something drawn up that you know, schemes guys open, but we'll have to see how that goes. And then running the football, you gotta assume Caden Roach, who was the second leading rusher for this Warhawks team last year, returns and kind of leads the team there. But man, do you see, I hate to ask this because we've been fairly even-handed when we do our previews. Do you see anybody on this offense that immediately sticks out that you're like, hey, that could be a guy that, you know, steps up and becomes an important part of this team?
No, you mentioned Caden Roach is probably stepping up into the RB1 position. He only did that on 18 rushing attempts.
Right.
So, I mean, he was averaging 6.2 yards per carry, which is, I mean, that's impeccable. But on 18 yards per carry, again, that small sample size, you can't, just like with Rhett Rodriguez, you don't know what that becomes.
Right.
I think if someone's going to break out, it's going to be just due to scheming. No one's going to just prove that they were a gem that the previous regime overlooked. It's going to be scheming that makes a guy break out.
For sure. And we'll see, you know, who out of that pack, you know, kind of emerges and becomes the guy. And when I'm looking at it here, you know, I apologize, folks. It's really tough to find something to kind of talk about with this team. And I mean, I guess you just kind of have to hang your hat on, you know, Terry Bowden and Rich Rodriguez and hope that that's enough, and hope that he can recruit some guys and get some transfers in that can kind of help do something in this offense, because it was ugly last year. So kind of, and the last thing I wanted to mention about Caden Roach, you know, you talked about his just 18 carries. I mean, I think this would be it for any normal team. I think this would be common sense, but if a guy's averaging 6 yards a carry and you've only given him 18 carries, I think the answer might be a little bit more volume and at least just see what he has.
More volume. As we're talking about Caden Roach, I'm going through their last year's statistics. Roach had 7 receptions out of the backfield, which, yeah, again, small sample size. What does that mean? But that ratio, I think, is really interesting. 18 rushing attempts, but then 17 receptions. Yeah. I mean, that's what, like 30, that's over 30%, or for every 3 rushes, he's getting roughly 1 reception.
Uh-huh.
So I'm curious to see how Rodriguez, how Bowden, if they plan to utilize him at all in the passing game, or if, as we're talking about, is volume just giving us some funky numbers?
Yeah. I mean, that's always possible. I mean, especially the Sun Belt's kind of crazy anyway. So, I mean, we'll just have to see how that goes. So this is going to be tough too. Let's transition over to the defense. Bowden recruits Zach Alley, the former linebackers coach at Boise State, to come over and be his defensive coordinator. UL Monroe, again, last year, just absolutely brutal on the defensive side of the ball. They gave up 42 points per game, almost 7 yards per play, and gave up nearly 250 yards on the ground per game. So I don't know. Do you, I hate to set you up like this in your first, you know, appearance on the Sun Belt podcast. Do you have anything to add here?
So something you and I both struggle to find, and I think everyone will struggle to find, is the offensive guy. Who's the guy on the offense?
Yeah.
If you come over to the defensive side of the ball, ULM has their guy, Trevion Webster. He played, through my research, 534 snaps, which is more than double anyone else on the defense.
Sure.
He plays inside linebacker. He was averaging, like, I think, 8 tackles per game. He's their guy. He thrived last year. If memory serves, Monroe did run like a nickel set, like a 4-2-5 kind of look.
Yeah.
Almost exclusively. So Will Alley. Does Alley bring that same type of scheme? That brings that question. But the key difference between the atrocious offense and the atrocious defense is the defense has their guy.
There's at least a warm-blooded person on one side of the ball that might do
right,
something.
Somebody who has a semblance of being a functional football player is on that defensive side of the ball.
I think Webster's an interesting player. I'm looking at his kind of profile on their website now, ULM's athletic site. You know, very undersized for a linebacker, 6'2", 11" are his listed as his measurables. I'm kind of surprised that he was able to rack up as many tackles as he was, because there are running backs in the Sun Belt that are bigger than this guy. Right. So. I mean, good for him. You know, 82 total tackles, 2.5 sacks last year. I believe he led the team, or he was tied for the team lead in sacks at 2.5. So that should kind of tell you where this team was at. They only had 13 sacks as an entire team last year, and they only picked off 4 passes all year. So it wasn't as if they were getting to the quarterback, and they also weren't exactly forcing turnovers at a high rate. But yes, so that's something that they will absolutely need to do. Secondary wise, they were dead last in pass efficiency defense. I guess saying all that to say, it would be putting it mildly that it's going to be a building year in Monroe.
Building is a very, very generous word, because to say you're building insinuates that you have the pieces in place.
Right.
And I mean, we're at the part where we haven't bought the wood. If I'm the coaching staff in Monroe.
We just cleared the, yeah, we just broke down the previous house's foundation, and now we just have an empty lot waiting to be built.
And I've got my contractor. His name's Bowden, and that's about it.
So, I think that's fair. So, looking at this year's schedule for the Warhawks, man, the schedule makers didn't do them any favors, really, now that I look at it. I see one win on this schedule.
Let me pull it up, but I'm just going to go out without having seen it yet. I'm going to say that sounds a little generous.
Well, I don't know. They play Jackson State in week two. So I think they'll beat Jackson State, maybe. But, I mean, whoever their AD deciding to just make their entire out-of-conference schedule either a top-flight G5 school in Liberty or LSU or Kentucky is not doing them any favors. That's kind of their out-of-conference schedule. So
to your Jackson State point, UL going to be coming off an absolute beating at Kentucky. That's going to be a tough game. No one expects them to win. Jackson State, however, and I don't know what their football landscape looked like. They'll be playing Florida A&M.
Well, so now that I'm reading it, Jackson State is an HBCU. So maybe, but wait, isn't that that's Deion Sanders' team, right?
Is it?
Jackson State? I believe so.
That could, Jackson, let's see, Deion Sanders.
Coach Prime. Yep, it sure is. So that might not be a winnable game because Jackson State was pretty good as an HBCU last year. So the one thing I'll say, I want to look on the bright side here. They do get 14 days between their game between Kentucky and then them playing Jackson State. So,
and then you've got 7 days until your game against Troy. Do you rest your guys against Jackson State for your in-conference game?
No, because I don't think there's another guaranteed win on the schedule. I think you have to play they might be having to play to their full extent of their ability to win that game. So, you know, I don't know, but we'll see how that game goes. And then, like you said, they open up Sunbelt play versus Troy. I don't see them winning that game. They play at Coastal. Absolutely not. Georgia State, not winnable. Liberty, not winnable. South Alabama, maybe you catch South Alabama, like, on the wrong day. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then Texas State, I think, is the only other winnable game on the schedule. I mean, they end the season, they don't have to leave the state, but they play number 16 ranked LSU and number 23 ranked Louisiana to start. So
you mentioned Texas State. At that point in the season, I think Spavadal will either be getting fired or be fired by that point. So if you can catch them at a good assuming there's a coaching change. If you can catch them right at the hip of a coaching change, maybe you steal one out at Texas State.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, although, you know, them firing Spavadal could go the other way. And Texas State could be, you know, everybody just decides that they're playing for their roster spot. Because they're like, well, the guy that recruited us is gone now, so, like, the next head coach is going to come in and want his guys. Like, we have to show up on film. So, you know, maybe that might actually go the other way. That might go the other way. Not a lot of positives for UL Monroe. They had a rough season last year. We knew it was going to happen. I didn't forecast them to finish 0-10 like they did. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they beat Jackson State and they finished the season 1-11.
I'm going to concur, 1-11. No, I'll put my name next to 2-10 season.
Yeah.
I think between South Alabama and Texas State, odds are one of them's going to fall your way.
Sure.
As unlikely as they both are, odds are one of them's got to fall.
Right. Okay. Well, that will pretty much wrap up. I mean, this was a faster episode than we typically have when we do these in-game previews or in-season previews. you know, that will pretty much wrap up the Sun Belt. We've knocked out all 12 teams, and now we're just looking ahead to real, actual football to talk about and discuss. Zeke, like, man, it's right around the corner. How excited are you for the upcoming season?
I think this is going to be a really important year for the Sun Belt Conference in terms of building their brand. And that's exciting for me as someone who covers the Sun Belt, me as someone who wants these smaller, you know, group of fives to be successful. It's a fun time to be in support of the Sun Belt. You know, between Louisiana and Coastal, and then I think Georgia State's on the rise. Obviously, App State is a strong team. I by the end of the season, I think the Sun Belt could have possibly three ranked teams. I think it's just going to be a really fun season.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, I'm as excited for anybody for like real actual football to watch and discuss versus just trying to project all this stuff. So, yeah, that will pretty much wrap up this episode. Zeke, if you want to tell people where they can find you on social media.
I'm on Twitter at Zeke Palermo, ZekePalermo. I post weekly stories for Underdog Dynasty, like I said earlier, talking primarily about Georgia State and Georgia Southern, but we'll probably see just overall Sun Belt content there as well. And, you know, God willing, I'll be back on this podcast in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was great to have you on, man. And for everybody listening at home, you can find me on Twitter at WatchTheStone. You just touched on Georgia State and Georgia Southern. I just had an 1,100-word preview about Georgia Southern come out, just discussing like the amount of things changing in that program from this year, you know, last year to this year. So people could go find that on the site. And yeah. This has been another episode of the Underdog Dynasty Sunbelt Podcast.